the blessings of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Dharmam Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dityampi Tatyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gamini Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo prajna paramita hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By a compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. The precept of restraint and religious observances. The precept of obedience to all good laws. The precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts. Not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so. Not to take that which is not given. Not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct. Not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority. Not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so. Not to publish other people's faults. Not to extol oneself and slander others. Not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings. Not to be angry. Not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness. In the practice of pure attention. In the practice of ever-expanding faith. In the practice of constant devotion. In the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day. O happy blessed place. O happy blessed time. O happy blessed path. O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dityampi tatyampi sabaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness.
here
to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
Shall we look at this morning? So go ahead.
When we started talking on Thursday in the group about spiritual principles behind, I can't remember exactly how it was worded, but what I took away from it, the spiritual principles behind practice guidelines and and things that we do in practice.
So kind of like, why do we do what we do from a spiritual perspective?
Right. And there's just somebody that's so hungry to know more about that. What I'm seeing about it is that it just seems like opens the door to freedom. As I am just, my experience is of wanting to be the right person and follow the rules. And I can just see that possibility is to always be in that place of looking at, you know, what's the spiritual principle behind this and choosing that.
Yeah.
And instead of being in that really small place of, oh, I'm going to get in trouble if I don't do follow the rule.
Well, that's exactly what it does, isn't it?
Yeah.
To understand what's behind it kind of frees us up to, instead of being like a kind of like a little person running around trying to do the right thing, we see what we're going for. And then we can respond from that place instead of from the whole world of conditioning sets up.
Yes. Yes. And just one of the things that comes up for me is we talked about not interfering with another person's practice. And I've been looking at that, and it just seems like there's just like, that applies
pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, it's just so broad. Uh-huh. You know, I can see how it could be like, you know, staring at somebody when they want to share. It could be, you know, rushing in to try and help someone in a situation where you project they need help and maybe that's not true. You know, it could
pretty much any way that we might apply our conditioning to another person.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I'm projecting, tell me if this is how it feels to you, I'm projecting that the place you're looking from towards that is the spirit of inquiry that we've been talking about.
Yes.
You're not looking at it from a point of view that is trying to assess what the rules are in order to do the right thing with it,
right.
But it's just so open. It's all kind of a mirror for practice, sort of.
Yeah, which is a shift. You know, because I realize I've really been coming from that place of, well, that's a rule. Don't walk up and say, hey, how are you doing, to somebody. And and not looking at it as, and actually, I mean, I see there's a spiritual principle behind that now. I mean, it's a disrespect, really.
Right.
You know, like you say, it's my conditioning, my need to, you know, engage in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's kind of neat about that is seeing the practice principle behind it makes it become natural, potentially.
Yeah.
Because the trying the rule thing is completely unnatural, because you have to remember it. when the occasion arises, you have to kind of quickly, as quickly as you can, get out the rule book and figure out which one applies. But it's just completely unnatural, and it's very unlikely it will, any of that will respond to whatever's happening appropriately.
Yeah.
But if you kind of understand it, then it's there when you need it. And it doesn't have to be any kind of looking, it's just here the occasion arises, the understanding arises with it, and then, you know, if there is an action that's required, you know, the action follows.
Yeah, as you were saying that, I just saw that's the difference between being that place of no thought,
mm-hmm.
you know, because having that huge rule book inside.
It's a lot of thoughts.
It's a lot of thoughts. It takes up a lot of space,
uh-huh.
you know, and...
That's funny, like I just thought of like a computer, you know, I don't know enough about computers, but, you know, there's a certain amount of space it has, and you clog it up with stuff, there's just not really anything room in it.
The hard drive is like really full.
It is really full. Well, the rule book, of course, is like an encyclopedia,
uh-huh.
because there's the rules, and there's all the exceptions, and the exceptions to the exceptions, and then the second guessing of conditioning,
right.
and then, you know, there really is no way to get it right, so it just kind of goes on endlessly.
I know, I have to laugh. I mean, as you're saying that too, I can see, you know, I'll see somebody do something and the whole rule book thing goes, I thought that was, you know, what are you doing? I thought that was, you know, and when I'm coming from that rule place,
mm-hmm.
it's like, you know, that's page 384
in
the rule
second.
Book. And I why are they doing that?
You can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, anyway, I'm just really interested in that, and I'd like to hear as much as I can about the spiritual principles behind
everything.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah. And I bet you that spirit of inquiry will get you there on your own a lot of times too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because there's an opening to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the information is inherent in the thing, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Although it is awful helpful to have someone who has a larger perspective to, you know, say something about that, to help us there.
Yeah.
But that's how, you know, that's how they got there too, ultimately,
yeah.
is in the thing is the information that comes to from clarity.
Wow. That's good to be reminded that that's ultimately how they got there. You know,
mm-hmm.
again, that's going to that place of, that's that shift again, you know, going to some outside person versus learning to be in that spirit of inquiry within,
mm-hmm.
And to look at it spiritually in that way from within.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because what I was seeing as you were saying that is both things, really. When you think about that's what was so amazing about the Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't know if you could say, you know, that the Buddha got there on his own either completely, but because he had whatever came before him to inform him, but you know, it's kind of startling. There's that fact in history. You know, he sits under the bow tree, and it all opens up for him, and he sees how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And then he tells somebody, but then they actually can't get it through his telling it.
Mm-hmm.
They can only get it through going to their own experience of what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody gets it, and then they pass it on to the next person.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been kind of this thread through all that time right here to this present day.
And that there's still the guide there saying, you know, look here.
Mm-hmm.
And then the looking is up to you.
Right? Yep. Yep. Yeah. And then it seems like there's responsibility, I think, that comes with that too, which is very much what you're talking about, that we practice looking from that place also,
mm-hmm.
instead of from that smaller place of conditioned mind as much as we can, because that's how the Dharma will continue to be passed on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that information mm-hmm. will continue to go to the next people who need to receive it.
Yeah, it's a real. It seems like a real spiritual adulthood or a growing up.
mm-hmm.
to come to that place
mm-hmm.
of that kind of looking.
Yeah, that kind of willingness.
Yeah.
Yeah, and setting aside all of the fear and the constriction, everything that is behind the old karmic way of approaching it,
yeah.
in order to give that to ourselves, I think we could say, but then also to give it to whoever else happens to be around.
Which is, I've just been out in a lot of that fear and constriction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can see that that's part of, you know, coming up because of that shift of switching to inquiry.
Yeah, the conditioning is kind of just getting rattled by that.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm at one of those places where this is all too hard, you know, just metaphorically, you know, give me a cheeseburger and a and a hot bath, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And
not
and,
at the same time, hopefully.
I don't know, it might be.
Maybe that would be.
Just bring it on. And also seeing that, God, I've been in that place so many times, and it's just not the door.
It's no fun.
It's just not going there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what keeps coming up for me as we're talking is kind of the Zen opposite of that. You know, there's lots of stories from the past, and also from within our Sangha, you know, from things that have happened here, of people coming from this place doing something that's just radical, mm-hmm. something that seems crazy or absurd from conditioned mind's point of view. You know, actually, Sherry's doing this kind of thing all the time.
Yeah.
We've just gotten used to it. you know, but just coming from places so completely different from that.
Yeah.
And the, you know, the freedom and the, just, and the, yeah, just the freedom that comes with that.
Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Let's see, Alex.
I've been looking at something really similar. I've about this practice of spiritual inquiry. It's like the universe is really vast, and conditioned mind is really like a pinprick, maybe half of a pinprick and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just constantly amazed at how there is so much out there, and even in the practice that feels like I'm able to start seeing more and more. It's like, it's amazing how much is completely an absolute mystery.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, you know, like someone introduces something into it, and all of a sudden it just starts branching out all over the place, and I start seeing connections about how all these sorts of things start to work.
Uh-huh.
And
it's amazing when, in that little kind of bubble you're describing, it seems complete, doesn't it?
It does.
Like we're seeing everything.
Yes, it's like everything that's in my life, or, you know, I'll just use it in those kinds of words, in my life.
Quotes,
lots
of quote marks.
Needs quotes and quote mm-hmm. marks, yes. It's like, it's just the way it is, you know, it's like that, it's almost like a given. It, like the movie that I have inherited is the one that's reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just constantly amazed at, like, you know, so you have, like, what you just said about, you know, Sherry lives in that place and just introduces one thing, and it's like all of a sudden the system goes tilt,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, how does that fit in with, you know, and then, when I start getting into conditioned mind, it's like it's all just a mush, but when I actually sit with it and have the experience of it, it's like, oh, that fits with this, that
mm-hmm.
fits with that, and then I start noticing whole lots of different shifts happening.
Yeah, and so, and then just the whole, your what you're aware of
expands.
Really expands.
Totally, totally. I just remember this, it's like the first chapter of something that she'd given me to read a while back. It was Wei Wu Wei. It was this Ask the Awakened. It's really interesting. Can't read it all in one shot.
It's very, very dense.
Dense.
Yeah.
Dense, capital D-E. at least was for me. I just remember the first chapter was really neat because it actually talks about that. It talks about how, as beings, and even spiritual, as we're practicing spirituality, we tend to pick and choose the things that fit with conditioned mind. It's like, even with these great, you know, masters or whatever like that. It's like I will glom onto the thing that I understand or fits in with my world, and I will gravitate towards that and hear that, but miss vast amounts of everything else that that person is saying.
As a matter of fact, the person you talk to could be saying the exact opposite.
Could be.
But it wouldn't matter because you'll still hear the same thing.
Exactly. It's like, it's just fascinating how the filter just hears what it hears, likes what it likes, interprets what it interprets, and misses even amazing amounts of information. So this practice of inquiry is really, it's really like just this sitting and saying, you know, I really don't know, but I'm open to receive.
Yeah,
more.
It's really fun too, isn't it?
It is, because I don't know. You know, it's like people talked about, like I'm just amazed, like people talk about, you know, you should drink so much water a day or something like that. And I don't know how many times I hear that, and it's like, oh yeah, whatever. And then I start doing it, and it's like, wow, where have I been all these years of my life? Mm-hmm. You know, where it's like, everything else just starts fitting in, you know, with, so I think that I feel this way because of, oh, I didn't get enough sleep, or I ate this, or, well, maybe I didn't drink enough water. It's like just when I start just like practicing just something as simple as that, or trying this, or everybody says you do practice and it makes everything good, and but I've got stuff to do, and then I actually sit down and meditate and do my reporting and listening and do things that take care of me. Wow, it worked. Why am I amazed by that over and over again? It's just fascinating.
It's good, isn't it, too, that we have a form for practice that we can apply ourselves to.
Yes.
So we're not kind of left on our own to make that shift that you're talking about.
Exactly. Right.
Because here, we in practice in general, particularly at the monastery, we don't really have any choice but to kind of run up against the assumptions we're making.
Yes.
And then, we run up against one and we see it, let go of that, and then suddenly that opening happens that's there. And that's happening continually.
Yep.
And so as we go along, we get to more and more see and feel what it's like to live from the place where it's not contained within conditioned mind. And we're just open to the information that life is offering all the time.
Yes. And that's where life can actually lead the way.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Let's see, June.
In the spirit of looking at things that one has assumed, that I have assumed and believed, I would say it's a guideline that I've been living by for many, many years. It's not really a monastery guideline, but it's just
a condition guideline.
Yeah. And it's about how I hold my body and how I walk, how I move, and the trigger for looking at it is back pain. So our esteemed yoga and Pilates teacher has helped me see, has taught me that when the body walks, the sacrum moves in a kind of a subtle figure eight, and it's changed my life. Looking at what precipitates the distress with the back, what I've been seeing is all these beliefs and assumptions about how one should hold one's body, how one should look when one walks. And it's cruel, it's absurd, it's negating of anything filled with life and love and enthusiasm. It's It's just dead. And and so for the last few days, when I walk, been figurating. And I picture a young swim athlete, specifically basketball players, and how they move, yeah. And the way their limbs and their spine. And on some level, I feel like I look that way. On another level, the voice in my head says, you look silly. Well, I don't think so. And if I do, I don't care.
And besides, that's coming from the same place that hurt your body.
Oh, yes. Yeah. It's coming from that same very old, very young. Actually, it's coming from something. Mm-hmm. And so when there's awareness that I just moved from the computer to the kitchen and with a step back, moving from my, walking from my knees and my ankles, arms rigid, when I realize that happens, joy just fills my body. Mm-hmm. I have an alternative. I can see this is what's going on. Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's so empowering, isn't it?
It is. And it just, I want to walk from here to Timbuktu. I want to migrate from here to Murphy's and back. Just, it is. And this, again, all in a way of saying how good to see what has been superimposed on a person's mind.
Right.
With that, they haven't been able to see. And to have a practice that gives them an alternative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it strikes me as well in what you're saying, the kindness in the way life is in all this. Because without that bit of pain that you've been experiencing, then I bet you none of this would have become available to you.
Yeah, yeah.
So life has a way of saying, that's not it. There's something going on, something to pay attention to. We resist it because it's generally something painful that sort of brings it to our awareness. But that pain is the gateway to, you know, a freedom from what it is that's we might say psychologically causing us to suffer. Physically causing us, you know, pain and discomfort. That little hint from life, if we have a practice, can direct our attention in a way that we can free ourselves from what has sort of got us.
Yes. Yeah. And the astonishing karma of to have ever been introduced to something different.
Mm-hmm.
I've been going to the grocery store or something, noticing people who clearly have something on the racks from the way they walk, and wishing I could just go to them and say, come with me. Got some things to talk to you about, and that will be introduced to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of gratitude from that place.
Because
without practice, you would be someone with a bad back. And it will be the end of it.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm aware that if my back never gets any better, I would say that right now it's not a bad back.
Mm-hmm.
But if everything stayed just as it is right now, physically, just letting go of the beliefs about how a person should walk. You know, it extends to breathe, how a person should breathe, how a person should walk, how a person's shoulders should be. I never been aware that I had all of that.
Mm.
And it just flows through.
Mm.
I just see thing after thing. Oh, the clock.
And that in itself is joy producing.
Yes. So, just getting rid of that. Just having the knowledge of how the body actually works. Some, at least some knowledge of what a natural movement is.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Lots to be grateful for. And that.
Yeah, that's very inspiring. And I was looking at the practice principle, the spiritual principle behind guidelines. And one in particular, I last week was asked to post a schedule for a segment of our community. And when I did it, there was sort of a lighthearted playfulness that came out in the way the schedule was presented. And shortly after that, I got a request to take it down and do it the way we do it in Zen.
That's the quintessential monk experience, I think.
Yeah, do it over. nothing about that was bad or anything like that, just do it over.
That's not the way we do it.
So I really looked at it because that spirit, that playfulness had felt very natural, very, I would have said, centered.
Mm-hmm.
And as I looked at it, what occurred to me was the a guideline that I'm pretty sure exists, that when we say the daily recollection, we don't dramatize it, that we don't interpret, we don't put emphasis someplace because that seems like where emphasis should go. And what I saw when I put those two together was, it's almost like leave not a trace, that there was a personality putting a stamp on the schedule that was being produced. Or a personality, because different people, if we dramatize the recitation, different people will put emphasis in different places.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels, I haven't had a chance yet to run this by the guide, but it feels like that's what's being pointed at in both of those.
Yeah. Another example I can think of is a lot of times when people come on here on retreat, if you, after they've been here for a few days, you go down to the creek, you'll find little piles of rocks.
Oh.
I don't know if anybody else has had that experience. But and the way you could say, those are kind of neat. You know, they stacked them up, but they've made like a little stamp of their personality and presence in that place, which could be completely empty of that.
I just had the image. We've had the experience the last couple of days of discovering a cow has walked through the property, and the reason we knew is that the cow left some traces.
Some spots.
And it's really the same thing in terms of karma is doing. Karma is saying, this is me. This
it's really
is
appropriate
me.
Image.
Yeah. Those hadn't come together for me before. But, and it feels like that's, because I really looked rather than going to, oh God, did something wrong again.
Mm-hmm. Which would
went
be,
to, what is this?
Yeah. And that's the helpful place, isn't it? Because the,
oh
God, did it again. I mean, that all that is a conditioned strategy to bypass the opportunity to see what's being pointed.
Exactly. It's just to stay in right and wrong, stay in karma, and get ticked or get morose or get all of the above.
And then have the same thing happen again with the next content that comes down.
And I'm being picked on.
Right.
Instead of, it was fun to do that because it didn't require for more than a nanosecond going into this shouldn't be happening.
Right, and I'm projecting energy producing too.
Very much so, very much so, because it really opens up ways of seeing that same principle in action in lots of other circumstances. That whole leave not a trace is much broader than don't leave a blanket in the meditation hall.
Which is exactly what we've been talking about in our recent conversations around these practice principles.
That they,
That if it's a rule, it can only be applied to that specific situation that brought that rule about.
Which will never,
never happen again.
Happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So it's useless.
It goes into the rule book that fills up the...
It just keeps on getting fuller and fuller and fuller. But the practice principle, it's fluid and dynamic, and so it can adapt it. It's not like it adapts itself so much. It's not a good way of saying it, but what in it is appropriate to that which is arising now appears.
Yes.
As it can be applied to what's arising now.
Yeah.
It's, it's not even applying to, because it's not a separation from. It's like it, you know.
It informs.
Yeah, it informs. Yeah, because the rule thing is, I'm not here, the situation's over there, then I'm trying to apply some idea to the situation. Of course, that can never work, because there is no separation.
Right.
It's like the other alternative happens from within it. It's like we're a part of this thing that's unfolding. That within us is also a part of that. It unfolds, like the information that's there unfolds with it, and it all manifests as something.
And it's all appropriate
and
to the moment.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really, really enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Cameron.
Well, I love that image of the cow patties of coffee. I remember that one. I just recently, so I don't have a lot of experience to speak from at this point, but I've just recently adopted a practice, which I think I didn't think of it in terms of practice principles and like that, and but I think it fits in with our discussion of the practice principles and the spirit of inquiry. I've started looking at things through how it fits on a continuum between indulgence and impeccability, which is big spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Two far ends of duality.
Two far ends of, and so the reason that came up is that kind of that human beings that are conditioned tend to indulge that conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
And the way to end suffering in recitation, we say it, that if we, I forget how it goes right now, I just drew a blank, but if we keep doing the same thing again, we keep getting the same results. If
mm-hmm.
we want to end suffering,
mm-hmm.
we do it differently. And so that's on that end.
Oh,
that's
I see.
Impeccability.
So it's not a two sides of duality. It's what you're saying is either you're either indulging your conditioning or you're being here. That's what you mean by impeccability.
Impeccability is like, that's a term that an impeccable warrior,
mm-hmm.
is, I've heard that term for to describe someone who's sincere and authentic in their practice.
So different from indulgence, and we might say something like...
perfection or...
like denial.
Yeah.
Which would be just as much of a part of the conditioned package, but on the other side.
Yeah, no, but to sort of look at it's a way of reflecting on practice,
mm-hmm.
for myself,
mm-hmm.
and so because I'm seeing that it, yes, true, it's a kind of a generic thing that we indulge our conditioning, but I'm taking that on as I'm really owning that and saying,
mm-hmm.
yeah, we really want to move in the direction,
mm-hmm.
towards the impeccability of making, mm-hmm. another choice.
Kind of like, I'm going to take responsibility for this.
Exactly. Responsibility. So the impeccability is responsibility, adulthood, and I think somebody already alluded that to that today. And then the indulgence is being a child and expecting,
mm-hmm.
you know, mom will come along and take care of me at some point or something,
mm-hmm.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of that continuum. And so it feels like something to really work with. In a way of looking at that, to kind of look through that lens. And I did that this morning. There were two decisions that I made. And there was some, you know, like there often is with decisions sometimes. I just decided what came up, and then looking at it, and how it might fit on that continuum.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, depending on who's looking and what they're evaluating, ooh, it's a sliding scale there on that continuum,
uh-huh.
you know.
Did you get to a place of clarity with it?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
so. Yeah.
It's an interesting process, and I actually had that happen to me this morning too, because there was a decision to be made, and there was a bunch of stuff about it, and I could feel, I mean, I actually wasn't sure for a while, but after a while, I just sort of got it, what in it was the conditioned, what in it conditioning was bringing to it, and what was the decision that could be made that really would be, in language you're using, impeccable,
yeah.
In the sense of not giving any of me to conditioning in acting in the circumstances that were there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was clean, in other words. Oh, you know, yeah. I could do this, it's what I really want to do, but I'm going to give a piece of my life to conditioning to do it. Or I can just do this. I have to let go of all this conditioning in order to do that. But ultimately, that's what's really going to serve me, and it's going to yeah. feel good, and it's going to bring me joy in a way that I really want.
Right. And if we're not looking, we could make the decision over here that you didn't make, and then feel bad about it later.
Yeah, yeah. Which is kind of the whole point.
Yeah. You mm-hmm. you know, see the cow patty that was left. Yeah. So the one of the decisions was that I have a commitment to an exercise routine. And it takes some time, and the place where I do my exercise is not heated. So I went over an hour ahead of time, you know, because it had to be here by 10, right? Mm-hmm. So I turn the heat on, and I go over an hour later, and it's 35.
Whoops.
And so I thought, okay, you know, I'm bundling up to do my exercises, and I get this, it was just like, it was freezing, and, you know, I was thinking, now this is a commitment. I'm committed to this. And then I'm thinking, I'm doing this with my muscles tight because I'm cold. And that, you know, so there was like, if I got into the head, there was an argument for impeccability being the one who will just hunker down and mm-hmm. do it freezing. And
mm-hmm.
and then there's the side of, is this really kind and considerate? Is there a way I could do this later? And that was what, anyway, it kind of got into a head thing,
mm-hmm.
but I eventually just made the decision, and I think I'm feeling like it was a correct decision, and I can work with it,
yeah.
and yeah, follow up with it, because I decided not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that it just wasn't producing the result that it was
mm-hmm.
designed to
do. And the correctness in it really isn't on the level of content, is it?
Exactly.
It's in the place you're coming from.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm looking at it, and I'm not deciding not to do it because I'm cold and I don't want to, and I get out of it because I set it up so then I still have a commitment to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In doing it in a kinder way. So that kind of format for and looking for the principles in it, too.
Mm-hmm. So what I hear you saying is, as things arise, you're referring to, it's not really a set of ideas, but guidelines, we might say.
Yeah.
That will, they're not rule-based, but they're sort of like kind of a sense of how things work,
mm-hmm.
that you can run that by in order to get a reflection to assist you in seeing where it's coming from you,
mm-hmm.
so that you might come from the correct place that is, you know, the, like a place of kindness, for example. You know,
yeah.
that's always going to be correct in that kind of
yeah.
purpose. Or
yeah, whatever. And keeping in the forefront of my looking is that I'm looking to move towards this side of the continuum. I'm looking for taking responsibility for this,
mm-hmm.
not for looking for a way to indulge conditioning's you know, normal way of doing it or getting what it wants, like you said.
Right.
That
and
kind
in,
of thing.
Yeah, in an interesting way, that folds everything into impeccability.
Uh-huh.
Because you might be doing, you know, do something that's really, turns out to be really unskillful.
Yes.
But because your ultimate intention is
yes.
to move to that place, then even that is a part of the process by which you discover what is from
absolutely.
Here and what's not from here.
I did that yesterday. I have been working, not working, but joyfully directing myself to a different way of eating and a different way of being with myself. That way, and yesterday I did something that was way off on this end of the continuum.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a big indulgence in the wrong direction. And I kind of knew I was doing it, and I just wanted to do it. You know, it had been a long time that I wanted to do it. And so then I watched afterwards. And so it was all, even though it was the content and the behavior was down here, it worked itself back into the other side because I could actually see the choice that I made and how it felt and how that's not really the choice I want to make. It's not the way I want to feel. And so,
mm-hmm. So we might say that even in that, impeccability was happening. Because of the spirit of inquiry that you're bringing.
Spirit of inquiry and the willing to look and the willing to accept, you know, to take responsibility that mm-hmm. that was the decision I made mm-hmm. and that was the choice I made and that's not the choice I continue to want to make. So mm-hmm. I can.
Yeah, and then paying attention that happened afterwards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Leslie.
Well, I haven't spoken a number of times. I haven't spoken here when I've been here a while, and part of me just, you know, wants to stay not. But I know that's not a good idea. Because then, and I get this back and forth. You know, I know there's a. I've had a lot of conditioning has really got me with regard to has off and on here, where it's, you know, you have to make sure there's a lot of contingents on speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, although I know that generally, if I'm being told not to speak, I should speak, like that I kind of get, but then it sort of gets deeper where it's. You know, I get totally identified because I'm comparing my practice with other people's practice.
So let me see if I'm with you. So I think what you're saying is there's a conversation going on with conditioning about all this, about how you should speak and your practice in relation to everybody else's practice. And as a result of that conversation, the temptation is to kind of keep it to yourself, which is essentially kind of keeping that conversation in here where it can just sort of do what it does. And what you're attempting to do by speaking is put it out there. You said you saw, you can see how that's not a good idea to kind of hold it back here. To kind of put it out here, we'll maybe get to see it in a different way.
Sort of. Well, part of it is that you know, part of who I have been is this person that talks too much. So, see, conditioning gets me because it throws in that you know, trying to get me. It's almost as like flipping now. You know, now mm-hmm. it's going to go with, well, don't talk because mm-hmm. that's always better.
Anything to assist it in dominating you and what's possible for you, would you say? It doesn't really matter right. what side is doing.
Right, but I can see the two sides.
You can see the two sides. Mm-hmm. Now, do you find that helpful to be able to see it in that way?
A bit, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, and there's a big thing about, you know, if you don't know what you're going to say, well, then don't speak. Or if it doesn't go with, you know, what's cut off on Sundays, there's like amazing, everything kind of fits with what everybody shares. It's mm-hmm. almost amazing. And so there's, you know, definitely that, oh, well, if you don't know what you're going to say, well, it's not going to fit in, and mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah.
So that's what conditioning says. What does the heart say about it?
Well, the heart really wanted to speak about something else.
Or might we say the heart just wanted to speak?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's really the what seems the most important in this, isn't it? It's just getting out of that conversation.
Right.
I'm projecting that's what's happening now because yeah. instead of being in the conversation believing it, you're speaking about it and saying what's going on. So you've moved out of it to a place where, you know, you could say that you've aligned yourself with the group that's here this morning,
right.
with Sangha, against this thing that has a way of entrapping you in that suffering place you're describing.
Right, because, yeah, and that, because it just felt like if I sort of, well, you know, yeah, that's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's the awareness that makes that choice possible, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like I say, you can see the two sides. You've paid attention to it enough that you can see that how conditioning is operating. And so that gives you an opportunity to act in a way that's not from that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're probably aware, we've been talking a lot in the sangha recently about how there is no change in consciousness without a change in behavior. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what you're demonstrating. So the change in behavior in this case is instead of habitual behavior is to believe the conversation.
Or just stay caught up in it.
Just stay caught up in it, yeah. So the change of behavior is to speak it instead of believing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's, I'm participating in all the wonderfulness that's going on right now, the conference call and the extended radio show and the DPAP email class. And boy, I submitted. It was great. I got the first assignment and I just did it. Because I tend to not do that and then sort of moves on, and then sometimes what happens mm-hmm. is I don't finish the class.
Right.
Okay, so I just did that. And then this morning I looked at, there were responses, which there often are on Sundays, and realized, and so I just want to be, I'm being completely punished by conditioning for not getting, and instead of celebrating, hey, oh, I see what I was, mm-hmm. what the assignment was, and
that was actually the assignment, I think, to celebrate.
Yeah, well, that was the thing, I didn't get the assignment, so I don't really know who did that assignment. But
even all that's coming from here, isn't it?
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm. Because you got what you got.
But what I'm getting now is huge punishment. I'm being told that I didn't have commitment practice, and therefore, I don't know.
Right. So what does the heart say about it? That's what conditioning is saying.
There's a lot of ammunition. Mm-hmm. But I cling to willingness is the key to the gate of awakening. Mm-hmm.
You keep on showing up. You keep on taking advantage of what's being offered.
It feels like when I heard Sherry shared during the conference that she was writing a book about resistance. Oh my gosh. I'm sitting there in front of my little laptop just going, oh gosh.
Thank you.
you must have been, whatever. Mm-hmm. Just.
Yeah. Well, in a way, we could say, no wonder you're being punished. Because of the willingness that's there. Mm-hmm. That's what we always get punished for. If you were just kind of blindly going along with conditioning's program, we wouldn't have any reason to punish you.
Well, if I was blindly going along, I wouldn't be participating in anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And condition would be really happy. Mm-hmm. But that's not the choice you're making. So we might even expect, I think we even talked about that on the video conference, we might even expect that reaction will be there. Because it's an indication that we're heading where we need to go.
Right, and I heard that and went, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, because here you are.
But I've had this thing happen when I meditate here. You're talking about the heart, and that's always, that's the thing, the part of the recollection I thought of. I don't have any tattoos in that life. That is the part that means the most, the line that I would put the most voice on, or, but that, and it happened this morning, and that is that who knows if it's a physiological thing, but when I meditate with the white wall, and it seems that it's usually here, even though I have white space at home, I see, it's like I see my heart projected or something. I don't, and it's just, it's like, it. I don't even know, but it just seems as if, part of me wants to do the brain thing, oh, there's some physiological reason that color happens, and blah, 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 blah. And I don't know what it is, but it seems like it's this familiarity and this thing that happens sometimes when I meditate, where it's just this pinkness to the wall, and it feels, it seems, it's like, I don't know, it just always seems like coming home, or like my heart is somehow reflected outside myself. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it's really, I enjoy it when it happens.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Jen.
So that was kind of interesting because it touched on, at least the thesis that I was looking at in it, touched on something that keeps coming up for me all morning, starting with the, you know, the practice principles. Mm-hmm. And really expanding, it reminds me of the practice of looking at the precepts, how, you know, the precept can seem so straightforward, and yet when you look at it, there's so much in it. And it seems the same way with the guidelines. And the one that I was looking at recently is custody of the eyes in the privileged environment. And I was connecting it up with that place of, that I heard alluded to, of comparing myself to other people, and realizing that, you know, like was talked about earlier, there's this place of, okay, don't look at people, which is the rule, but to really look at and realize the incredible respect that there is in, mm-hmm. the way I was playing with it recently is custody of the attention.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely have a karma to sort of, yeah, do that comparing thing and gathering information and what does it all mean, and you know, the whole meaning making machine.
So you might not even be doing it necessarily with your eyes.
Exactly.
But you're doing it with your attention.
Exactly. And it has the exact same result.
Mm-hmm.
It has the exact same result. I've been playing with how little information can I gather? Like how much can I even thought about maybe wearing earplugs?
Yeah.
Which in this environment is so unnecessary in some ways. And yet, I don't know about other people, but there's something, you know, when we'll be on a job site where there are chainsaws going or whatever, where we need to protect the ears,
mm-hmm.
there's something that deepens the in the focus being...
Well, there's information happening there all over the place. You wouldn't think there would be so much information, but there is. It's all over. Nothing I was thinking of, you know, I don't know if you know this, but when people climb mountains and they get up to the place where there's glaciers and there's a lot of reflected light, they'll wear these things in their eyes where there's just a little tiny pinpoint to look through to keep all the light out, so they don't get snow blindness. So we might get some of those too.
Yeah.
We
can have
earplugs and these things, and we can just kind of go along and just have what's right in front of us.
Yeah. It's really an incredibly helpful practice. I mean, you know, of course, in the as we go, of course, what we're going for is being able to have everything go on in life and still have the attention rest here. But in practicing that, it's so helpful to have it, to really minimize. It's why, you know, we have the privileged environment.
Mm-hmm.
We're minimizing that distraction because it's endless what conditioned mind can do with, as you say, the information that's coming in on a billion different levels all around us.
Yeah, that seems like a really helpful way to look at it too, doesn't it, in terms of distraction?
Because
mm-hmm. that's really what's happening. I mean, there's nothing in the information itself that is relevant, even
not
to conditioning. It's just the fact that the attention's out there on all everything else but it and what it's doing in the heart and what's possible in the heart.
Yeah, because the conditioned process is, of course, all that information, how does it relate to me?
Mm-hmm. And the me is in really big quotes.
Huge quotes.
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean about me? And I don't know if I can put this into words, but the reason it seems like such a rich practice is that the irony is that as the attention moves inward, there is, you know, it can seem backwards, right? Because all the attention's going to be on me, right? But as the attention moves inward, what is received from that is a direct experience of all of life.
Mm-hmm.
because that's the, that is the access point to life for this being.
Yeah. Tell me if this is kind of what you mean. I'm not supposed to put words to it, but instead of it being all about me,
yeah,
it's all me.
Yeah. So I've been playing with this, this sort of image of, and we talk about this all the time in different ways, but so it's all one thing, right? And so, and words break down here, but, well, life is Jen, and life is Justin, and life is, you know, everything, right? And so it's pointless to compare myself to Sally, because I am Sally. Or, and I, you can't really say I am Sally, because that makes it seem like Jen is everything. But it, and it's the reverse of that. But I am Sally. And that what it feels like, it's this really, turns it into this really fun game of the opportunity I have in this area, I'm pointing to this being of consciousness, is just to fully be Jen.
And because that is everything.
Because that is everything. And that it seems like that's the amazing sort of human possibility, is for each piece, part, again, you can't, the words fail, but to be that fully, that that way that consciousness is manifesting.
Yeah. So like as you and I are talking, the you know, the common illusion is that you're over there, I'm over here. We're two separate things talking to each other. But I was just, as you were speaking, I was just seeing how it's life talking to itself.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
we can have that idea. I mean, that's not a, that's a pretty common idea. But to really get that,
yeah,
that's kind of amazing.
Yeah.
It's life speaking to itself. And actually, in everything between you and, you know, you and
yeah,
I, is also it.
Yes. Well, and it, again, it speaks to why it's so powerful to have custody of the eyes, custody of the attention, the privileged environment, because the reason that's there is that everything else, like conditioning, bounces itself off of everything, and make, that's the way the illusion that it isn't one thing is maintained, that I'm separate from it.
Yeah, I have to be some individual thing separate from everything else in order to be a me and suffer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so, and that takes, that's a full-time job to to make that happen.
And it's a full-time practice that most of us are practicing that all the time. And it's why, all the way back to the discussion earlier where you were saying that, you know, the Zen masters pass the teachings down, but we have to practice it. We have to actually experience it. We have to actually be it, or
we have to move to that place. Thank you. Yes.
So, just an interesting meditation today. I have been deepening my spiritual practice at home, and it's been this amazing experience. And I'm just really excited about it. And I've been really contemplating about coming on retreat here, which I haven't done yet.
Maybe.
Just the energy that I'm feeling in, and the connectedness to here is just, it brings me to tears, you know, because it just feels really right. And anyway, so I came in today and I was, you know, sitting in meditation, and my foot started to fall asleep. And that's happened one other time here. And when I turned around to stand up, I almost fell over because I couldn't feel my foot under me. And so conditioning entered in during my meditation, and it's like, oh gosh, here it goes. I'm going to not be able to stand up, and I might fall, and I'm not, you know, the recitation, the part where it talks about like, there's no self and other. Oh, I'm just focusing on my foot, and, you know, I need to be one with the group, and
so conditioning just kind of launches itself.
How selfish of me to just be thinking about my foot, and you know, my energy is not with the group, and but it was so beautiful, because then I got this picture, and it was like I was watching a movie in my head, and it was a couple of the monks, and I think there was even more than that, maybe three or four, but there were two monks, and we were on a hike, and it was just like a flash, and we were on a hike, and we were hiking up this really steep ravine, and you guys had been on it before, and this was my first time, and I was having this really hard time climbing up this ravine, and two of the monks turned to me, and they had the biggest joy coming from them, helping me up the ravine. And I wasn't holding them back. We were one. Mm-hmm. And
perhaps even assisting them.
Maybe.
To do their practice.
Mm-hmm. And my foot was my struggle going up the ravine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we came out of meditation, and the first share was about someone wanting to help maybe someone in their practice. And it was just so amazing that I was being helped by the monks in my meditation. And it was funny because right after that image of the climbing that ravine, I just sat with my foot and I just let it go. Mm-hmm. And there was this little moment of no thoughts. It was peace. It was serene. I was there. I was in my meditation. And then, you know, it creeped up again, the conditioning and the pain of my foot and screaming in my head saying, just ring the bell. <You know? laughs> When is this going to be over? And I just haven't had that much of a struggle in meditation in a really long time. Like, I think this was probably the most difficult sit I've ever had.
And I hear you saying, or I hear you describing really doing practice with that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the one rule? Have you heard about? Well, it's in the short recitation, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, the one rule is we'll use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves mm-hmm. to suffer so we can drop them in suffering.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that was, it's kind of like the back pain that was talked about mm-hmm. earlier. That was your opportunity to see how conditioned mind does what it does mm-hmm. and then to drop that and come here.
Yeah. And that my experience was exactly as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
But this,
how could it be otherwise?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it helped me to see something clearer in my practice and, mm-hmm. and part of being one with this. And
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it? Practice is
it's
fun.
It's really
to do
fun.
That.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and just kind of the with the struggle, you know, there's just something beautiful that can come out of that, you mm-hmm. know. And so I'm really excited. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And not to take away any future practice opportunities you might have, but just so you know, if that happens again, mm-hmm. you don't have to stand up.
I don't have to stand up.
No, you can just kind of sit
okay.
there. Like if something falls asleep,
uh-huh.
that's what we do. We just kind of sit there. You can just bow from where you're sitting, and that takes all the pressure off.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's our time. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.